Cliff Central.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central, and it's good to be with you this afternoon. Are you a young up-and-coming rising superstar in your corporate environment in your career, or perhaps you are a young entrepreneur who is looking to grow their business? Well, then this is the show for you. We talk all things future CEOs here. Unfortunately, today, the lovely Lubian Boyer, will not be joining us. She has some future CEOs work somewhere else. And so my voice is the voice you're going to hear, but along with... How do we describe you, Roy? A content expert, an HR expert, is that correct?
We'd like to think so.
You'd like to think so. I think you are. You're not a stranger, so welcome back to the studio. Let me just quickly introduce what we're going to be doing on the show here. So the first half hour, we're going to be talking to Roy, and we're going to be talking all things innovation in the HR space. Now, things are moving quite rapidly in a very interesting way in that world, and so we're going to be talking to him. He did a very interesting presentation at Gibbs a little while ago, and so, Gibbs Business School. So, if that's not enough to tell you the kind of individual that we're dealing with here in studio, well, then you must learn a little bit more about what Gibbs is and what Roy does. But then after the half hour break, we're also going to be talking to Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar. Now, he's been called Harvard's Professor of Happiness, or Professor Happiness. He ran one of the biggest classes or biggest conversations on a weekly basis over at Harvard, all around this idea of being happy. And so I guess I can ask the question to you at this point, are you really happy? Can you say that you're happy? Roy, can you say that you're happy? And if you can't, well, then you need to listen to what is going to be happening at 2:30. But let's get into the conversation here. Roy, welcome to the studio. Welcome back to studio. I won't tell everyone what you said to me outside about the first time you were here. How are you feeling today, though?
Still very nervous. It's intimidating being in the studio, but fantastic to be back.
Roy, you are a content expert. We're going to hand over to you and let you really control this conversation. I'll prompt with questions. How are things moving in this HR space? So you're there. It's Clark House, Human Capital. You seem to have your finger on the pulse. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in the HR space, especially around this idea of innovation. Because innovation just seems like a sexy word, but what does that actually mean? What does it translate into?
Absolutely. It's good to be back, Gareth, and to your point, innovation is bounced around every day by corporates, startups. It's all over the show, innovation, innovation, innovation. And what we wanted to do is unpack really what is innovation. And if we look at innovation, people are generally the custodians of innovation. But at the end of the day, human resources are the custodians of people. But innovation and human resources generally are mutually exclusive. Talk to anybody, you throw those two words together and people go, HR, innovative, never. HR don't add value. And that's kind of the topics we discuss a lot with our clients. So we did a lot of research around what makes great companies or what makes great startups, or what makes great entrepreneurial businesses. And a lot of stuff comes out around great companies retain innovative people, great companies train and develop their people, great companies reward their top performers, great companies look after the wellness of their employees, great companies hire top people, etc., etc. Great companies have an engaged workforce.
And I have to drop in here with a bit of a, I guess, pun. It all sounds great, doesn't it?
It sounds very pink and fluffy. And if we look at those keywords, retain, train, develop, reward, cultures, wellness, talent, hire, you know, just at the top of my head, effectively, those are all HR functions. Mm. And as I said to you, HR are the custodians of people, and people are the custodians of innovation. So then why are the two so mutually exclusive? And why does HR, in a lot of circumstances, never add value to people to enable them to innovate? And as a future CEO of any business, you want the best out of your people. You want innovative thinking people. And how do you get that out of them? And unfortunately, HR don't seem to help in that equation.
So I've got to ask, innovation often has been viewed as part of almost a rebellious kind of culture. And so you're not saying here that you want rebellious people part of your organization, are you?
Not necessarily rebellious, but maybe very different type of people, and you need to take a lot of factors into account when you're looking at these different type of people. I think the problem with a lot of people is we default to what we know. So mm-hmm. we hire people who are like us, who think like us, who act like us, and the diversity equation falls away. And I want to take a step back in time, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, sure.
Part of my presentation revolved around a guy called Billy Beane.
Okay, the baseball coach, I beg your pardon.
And you're one of the very few people who know who he is. So Billy Beane was a phenomenal individual. He was a professional baseball player. He moved on to becoming a scout. Then he became the general manager of the Oakland A's. Now, not many of you would know who the Oakland A's are or who Billy Beane is. Some of you might know who Brad Pitt is, and he played Billy Beane in a movie called Moneyball.
Mm.
Effectively, he became the manager of the Oakland A's at a very difficult time, kind of similar to the environment all businesses face today. A lot of challenges coming up against big players with big budgets. And he had massive budget cuts. His top players were being bought by bigger teams like the Yankees. And they were struggling. They couldn't win a game. And to win games, you attract, you know, fans, and fans bring revenue, et cetera, et cetera. So how did he manage to get to four consecutive playoffs in the early 2000s, I think it was, and win the World Series once, when on average he had a budget of less than $100 million or $100 million less than majority of his bigger franchises that he competed in? How did he do that?
And we're talking about competing against teams like, and this is where I may get it all wrong because I don't know so much about baseball, but I mean, we've got Yankees, we've got Red Sox, we've got, I think there's the
Cubs,
Indians. Yeah, exactly. And so there's the names that we know he was competing against.
He was competing
against,
and he was beating them with an average of $100 million less than in a budget. So how did he do that? You know, he really rethought the whole concept of baseball and how you recruit for baseball. And that comes back to human resources and talent within your organization. And we can get into a little bit more detail around kind of that a little bit later. But what's the problem? Why is this HR area not adding value to future CEOs or current CEOs? And what we're doing is we're finding HR is just failing in its ability to adapt. They're not thinking differently. We've done a lot of research around local clients. We've done some international studies. And what we've come up across is that 5% of companies globally believe HR add value. I wouldn't want to be in a department that 5% of companies globally go, you don't really add value to us. Why are you there then? And as a future CEO of a smaller business or a startup business, and you have budget constraints, you cannot have a department that's not adding value to your business.
Or perceived value anyway.
Because
really there is a lot of value that is there, but it has to be beyond the box-ticking exercise that sometimes HR is seen to be doing, right?
Yeah. And 70% of people globally and locally felt HR was far too conformist and restrictive. I mean, you know, they felt the HR environment was too complex.
Yeah, they create all the red tape and bureaucracy. That's HR, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And very few could provide any form of work analytics. And I'll touch on that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But what we did find, which was surprising, is that HR hardly or ever engaged with their business units that they, you know, that was one of the big communication gaps. And that's one of the challenges with you know, innovation is there's just a massive communication gap.
Hold on. You're saying that HR then almost functions away from the very people that they're serving. Is that, am I hearing you correctly?
Absolutely. So part of our studies, we came across this new world of work.
Mm.
There's a new world of work out there. There's the gig economy, the freelance economy, there's transformation, there's the globalization, there's mobility, all these kind of key factors. And we said to we sent out a research paper and we asked a lot of questions. We interviewed and we said, have you got a strategy for the new world of work as HR? And 80% came back saying, absolutely, we got a new strategy. And we're like, that's amazing. Mm. But then we said to those people, how many of you did you engage with your internal stakeholders and your clients that you service on the strategy? And 20% of those people only came back saying, yes, we engage with them. That for me is...
Sorry, 20%. Doesn't make sense.
Doesn't. And that's going like going out and telling your product department to go develop a new product, but they never go get market research. They just kind of do it in themselves. It's an epic fail, to be honest. So it's a challenging environment. And look, we also, to be fair to HR, a lot of the time they're sent into the ring with their hands tied behind their back. You know, it is difficult, especially when globally and locally, a lot of people are saying resourcing and talent management is rated as one of the worst deliverables of HR. There's a failure to connect. There's a strategic gap, and business need to innovate. You know, the business's need to innovate has surpassed HR's ability to give them that.
What's so interesting, of course, about this is we had a show a little while ago where we were discussing the gap between strategy and execution. And really what it comes down to is this idea that we're not engaging with our people enough. That's really the bottom line. So if you're not as effective or efficient as possible, it's because there's a gap there. Now, what I'm hearing is that you bring in a function, an HR individual or department, I guess really on the back of this desire to bridge that gap, but you're saying that the gap still remains.
Very big gap. And so where do we stand on HR's worth really is a question that needs to be asked. And I think the biggest thing that comes out is that the HR profession continues to experience a credibility problem and lacks that strategic impact that you're talking about. You know, there's a big focus on or a preoccupation with cost optimization, cost reduction, mm-hmm. sustainable cost management, for example. They're very much best practices focused. You know, let's roll out a framework that we can roll across every single department. And you know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure.
What's applicable to the tea lady must be applicable to the CEO. And it doesn't quite really work.
Mm.
And it's based primarily on industry generic good practices and benchmarks, for example. So it makes the HR function more efficient. But is it effective? And that's the question we kind of pose in this thing. But HR have a lot of obstacles, Gareth. I mean, they really do. As I said, they get sent into the ring with their hands tied behind their back. There's things like increased compliance. What took one piece of paper to get compliance 5 years ago has gone up 219%.
Yeah.
There's silos. There's diversity. There's mobility. There's such rapid changes in technology. There's big talented shortages. You're not only competing with your competitor on the road, you're competing with your competitor in Dubai and the United States, etc. Big paperwork trails in HR. Massive increased costs. There's data analytics issues. Changing nature of the employee and the employee relationship. That's a big one. It's for skilled workers, it's no longer where you work anymore, but what you're working on. And that's changing the dynamic quite aggressively.
So, I mean, I see this massive problem that you are now illustrating here. So let's move into this idea of trying to find a solution or what innovation or innovative ideas are doing to that problem. Where are you seeing changes really happen?
So unfortunately, there's no simple solution or no generic best practice that I can kind of roll out for you right now that it'll enable the HR function to become effective and strategic. But to tackle these issues, HR need to develop a deep understanding of business. And that's the key, that communication gap. They need to understand the businesses they serve. And a lot of the times HR, and I am being very generic across the board here. It's not every business or every startup is like that.
But
the research tells us that there is this big gap. It needs to be tied to business outcomes. And I think the four areas you can tackle to go from what I call being the water boy on the side of the field to actually being the guy who runs the plays, who actually gets involved in the strategic game plan and that true HR, you know, person, is things around capability, change, integration, and technology. Those are my top four. You know, HR need to become a capability builder. They need to build or innovate around staffing, develop training, build greater workforce capability through balancing global and local workforces, for example.
So I want us to pull this back into the example that you introduced earlier, which was a baseball team that was, I mean, really on paper, when you looked at it, you thought, okay, this team has got no chance at all. I remember there was even a specialist pitcher that had this weird motion or weird way of pitching a ball, and no one else would want him, even though his stats were as good as they were. And that's, I guess, where we're going with this conversation, isn't it?
Mm.
How do we build or develop a team that then serves the bigger picture? That's what I hear you talking, because that's what happened with Billy Beane. He went and he put together a team, really a puzzle, that then created an unstoppable machine, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And I think it comes down to one word, and that's technology.
Okay.
He used something called, you know, analytics. He really got down to understanding the core number around every single player.
Yeah, and what was their key performance area, their specific key performance area, and then how do we utilize that within this bigger picture, right?
Absolutely. So that's where the big breakthrough will become. I mean, technology, where it's going, in the future you won't need a human resources team of 10 people or 100 people. It'll be reduced to literally 5% of what the size is at the moment. There'll be things like artificial intelligence. We're looking at new concepts like gamification. There's things like virtual reality out there that are making massive impacts into the way we induct people or the way we train people. Mm. Gamification, how do we test people, on the ability to think strategically using gamification? It's a very new concept. But the big one, and this comes back to that belief in, is employee analytics.
Mm.
And that's where I think you get this, I always say haters can't hate on facts. And I always love facts because you bring out the facts. And how many times have people been passed up on things, based on biased reasons? For example, he can't be a good relationship manager. He doesn't have the look or the swagger.
Mm.
But in fact, actually doing the sales and, a great business development person, I think employee analytics comes down to building intelligence to project people's performance. It looks at a wider variety of things. It's about getting things down to one number. It's finding value where maybe other people won't see value in people. I mean, I've seen it time and time again where people are not let go or don't perform in a team, and they're very quick to let that person go. But maybe that person is better in a different part of the team or a different team completely. Use it as a baseball example, maybe, or a soccer example. Maybe they're playing, left back when they should be playing, midfield or striker, something like that.
This reminds me of a conversation that I had quite a long time ago with a well-regarded and really world-renowned, I want to call him HR expert. He would call himself a recruitment specialist, or certainly his business is in that area, where he spoke about the difference between developing a job description and a people description, and how often we put information out into the world which is all about a people description. They must have a certain kind of degree. They must have 5 years experience doing this, but we never then speak about the job and try and allow people to fit themselves to a job instead of to this idea of what a person should be looking like within a business. How do you feel about this idea of a job description versus a people description?
I see clients often, and we deal sometimes at very high level with job descriptions, and then a lot of the time these are copy and paste, really badly done, put together descriptions of what a job should be. And I don't think job descriptions really capture what is needed. I believe at the end of the day, you're looking at a skills description. Attitude description is probably a better one.
So there should be culture involved there. It should be, what are our expectations of you, quite specifically around this particular KPI and the attitude that is required. I like it. I like where we're going with this. Sorry I interrupted you.
No, not at all. And again, it comes back down to measuring that person and how well they're performing. So you can remunerate them on facts. You can see their performance based on numbers and not bias kind of concepts. And the advice to future CEOs would be to relook at that HR function that you in your organization as it grows. So it's not a department that's not adding value, but actually HR is a very exciting area and can add tremendous strategic value to businesses. And in fact, I was talking about employee analytics, and one of the notions is that employee analytics can literally become as important to the CEO as a balance sheet and a P&L statement. And that's where you're going, because it comes down to understanding exactly where's people's mental health, where's their wellness, are they engaged, are they not engaged, that kind of stuff. Are they living, breathing your brand, for example.
I like this idea of capacity. So measure your capacity, Roy. Measure my capacity. See where our real strengths lie, and then see how we can complement each other so that if you're an 80%er and I'm a 60%er, that you make up for the 40% that I'm missing, and maybe I make up for the 20% you're missing. Am I onto the right thing here? Is that what you're talking about when we're speaking about measuring people's abilities, capacity, getting this analytics, or these these numbers that you're referring to.
Absolutely. And you're painting a holistic picture. Clients, organizations track their external customers really well these days. They understand where they're buying, what they're buying, how they're buying, but often they're not doing the internal reflection themselves. And I think that's where employee analytics going. Very exciting time of technology. But there's an exciting place for HR, that really the future of HR is going to be very different. It's going to be a very strategic value add. And to those future CEOs out there or people who are in a CEO position, they really need to get their HR back in the game, if that makes sense. They mustn't be the water boys, you know. Get them in the game, and I think there's a lot of value that they can add if they're playing at the strategic level. And really, the future of HR is a very much more simplified kind of area, very much more entrenched, very much more engaged, integrated and aligned. I know those are buzzwords we're throwing out there.
Sure.
We can't go into detail in all of them, but I think the integration will allow that bit of HR technology to actually drive the strategic value you need from HR versus just being a transactional HR person doing payroll and how many days leave you have, or you know, I've got a compliance pack that I need to check, so let's fill out another 400 pages.
I can't even imagine an environment, and you'll know because you've probably seen this in your, certainly as you've moved around from client to client, an environment where the HR person really is not involved in every strategic decision that is made. Why? Simply because if the CEO says, look, we're going there, then the HR person technically really should be saying, well, actually, we don't have capacity to get there. Do you see that this is happening in organizations where they are left isolated, alone, out of the boardroom? Is that really what's going on?
So the studies point that direction.
Okay.
There are companies that are getting it right. I've met some phenomenal HR people who are driving the right things and are literally becoming the right-hand person to the CEO.
Mm.
At the end of the day, your people will drive your organization forward. As much as new technology and robots, etc., there will always be the people element.
Sure.
And people are different. They think differently. They act differently. You can't control them. But to your point, a lot of projects that are not desirable are thrown over the wall to HR.
Mm.
It's an HR issue.
Sure.
How many times have you heard that? It's an HR issue. HR need to sit around that boardroom table as a key strategic player to any new future CEO to help them add value to their organization, specifically to innovate.
So we've got some who are listening who are in a startup space. We've got others who are small or medium businesses. And then we've got some executives who are hearing this and saying, we need that change. Let's just quickly highlight three no-go areas. So whether someone is just starting or building their HR function, or whether they are looking to reinvent it to a certain extent or breathe new life into it, what are three things that they shouldn't be doing right off the bat? Three no-go areas.
So for a startup, the no-go is definitely, avoid the paperwork, avoid the compliance, avoid the red tape. Use technology to create your efficiencies to free your time up to do better things.
Sure.
So integrate your technology from the beginning. Have that kind of plan. Avoid the red tape and compliance.
And well, we're not saying don't be compliant. We're just saying the bureaucratic compliance element. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Be compliant, but don't create a 400-page paper trail.
Exactly.
Think differently about that. And the third aspect would be really you need to have this HR person own everything human related.
Mm.
They are your human capital strategist that sits next to you. To your point, we need to go in this direction. Do we have capability, etc., etc.? For CEOs in your bigger organizations, and we deal a lot more with those clients, we need to get away from legacy. HR as it currently stands needs to change completely. And it is a problem because there's a lot of silos. There's a lot of different systems. You're dealing with organizations that can't turn things around fast. But they need to, what I call, outsource or put all the stuff that took 100 people to do can probably be done by 10 people with a proper technology system.
Sure.
The person adding value to you that I would do is someone, call it a chief employee experience officer, for example.
Sure.
And again, those are the people who they're an internal human capital analyst. They also know everything that's going on in the outside world. They're going to trade shows. They know who the best performers are in your competitors. They also have the ability to tap into any preferred supplier that can add value, whether it be training, development, leadership, coaching, et cetera, and not be kind of bogged down in a procurement PSL list that you get told these are the preferred, and then, well, doesn't add value to me, I can't really use this. And the key third factor I would say is delivering customization to all staff. It's got to be personalized, and it can be done. It can be personalized. It doesn't have to be a tick box exercise that's applicable across an organization of 10,000 to 20,000 people.
I guess I'm asking the question, how can it be personalized? So if you're in an organization where you're employing 300 people, how do you make it personal for each of them without having a staff complement of 50 HR specialists measuring each of those individuals? But I guess that comes back down to your point of technology integration. Am I correct?
Absolutely. And it's about being entrenched in that specific organization. So the simplification will allow you to be a little bit more personalized.
Okay.
The entrenchment, where you're not a set of isolated HR practices, but really, you're entrenched in every business unit. You're aligned, you have an aligned philosophy and strategy to that of the greater business as well. And then again, the integration part, we're integrating the technology and the personalization to transform your HR, including that data analytics, that kind of stuff. And technology will allow you to do it. It's the decluttering of HR. Declutter. You know, you got that auntie who's got so much clutter in her house, you got to go clean that out.
Sure.
That's HR.
That's HR of yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
Yesterday. So, Roy, it's been great having you here. We're unfortunately running out of time. It sounds like it's quite a complex system or complex thing to get your arms around right in the beginning. But then once you begin to declutter your aunt's house, suddenly it turns into something that you can then move within and see or have a vision for. I think that's what we're talking about here today as well. So it is going to get a little bit more complex before it gets easier. Is that accurate?
Yes and no. It's still complex, and there's a lot of hurdles and obstacles to get over, and you've got to choose your battles. I think that's the key. It also comes down to budget and a lot of other things.
Sure.
But it can be decluttered, and it needs to be decluttered. If you want to be an innovative organization with innovative people, you need to think differently around a lot of other things like diversity, mobility, flexi hours. All those kind of things need to be brought into agile. People need to be able to tap into the best talent in the world on a freelance gig basis or freelance economy basis to get that knowledge into your organization and move away from HR going, well, they need to be a permanent employee, and we need to, you got to move away from that. You got to be fast and agile. But I just want to take, before we end, do we have time?
We've got 10 seconds.
You know, feather out of John Lennon's cap, imagine his song Imagine. Imagine an organization where business leaders, look to HR for that advice as they develop business strategies and drive growth. That's where you got to be as a future CEO with your human capital.
Roy, thank you very much for being here. That's Roy Clark, the MD of Clark House Human Capital. It's a search advisory and resource solutions firm. We really appreciate your insight. Thank you, Roy.
What a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you for your time.
All right. After the break, we are going to be coming back. We asked the question, are you truly happy? And it's an interesting conversation to be having in a future CEO's kind of environment. So we're going to be talking that with Professor Tal Ben-Shahar after the break. See you then.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com. Cliff Central. The revolution. I've got something important to tell you. CliffCentral.com.